Hey everybody, it's Pastor Brian Ross from Grace Life Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I want to welcome you to our midweek video this week. We're glad that you are tuning in and joining us here. I want to welcome you to our YouTube channel, Grace Life Bible. If you haven't already done so, I'd like to ask you to consider subscribing and ringing the alarm bell right here so that you guys can stay current with the ministry, with what we're talking about, preaching on Sunday mornings, and the content that we try to create here midweek. I want to welcome you again. For the month of December, our featured offer here, usually I feature one book a month. This month in December, we're featuring all of my books here, okay? All six of them from Dispensational Publishing House are available for 20% off all month. So if you are looking for Christmas gifts, if you just have been waiting possibly to pick some of these up, now's a great time to do that. As you can see here displayed, all six of the books are available from Dispensational Publishing House. And at checkout, if you use the promotional code BLESSED, you can save 20% on all purchases. So again, if you've been waiting to check some of these out, please consider doing that. You're not going to want to miss the December sale. And that sale ends, that 20% off sale ends the last day of the month on December 31st. So check that out. Also want to remind you about our Rumble channel here, Grace Life Bible Church on Rumble. We established this earlier this year as a alt tech site to YouTube should something happen to our YouTube ministry. And we are currently up to 165 subscribers here on Rumble. I don't know if you know, but it says up here Rumble went public last week. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this platform here moving forward. But we're excited and have you check that out as well. So what am I going to talk about in this video? What I'm going to talk about in this video is something that came up last week, okay, for me. And by the way, it's Wednesday morning. It's about 5 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday, December 8th. This video will be released on Thursday, December 9th. But last week, I was studying for this study right here. On Sunday, the 5th of December, a couple days back, I taught the adult Sunday school class Lesson 159. From This Generation Forever class, the study of God's promise to preserve His Word. I taught Lesson 159 on the rules to be observed in translation, Part 2. And what we were looking at is to what extent were the rules followed. So when I was preparing for this or putting the final touches on it, I listened to three videos from pro-King James advocates talking about issues related to the rules followed by the translators. And I was specifically interested in what they were going to say about rule number one. Rule number one, again, is the rule that says that they were to follow the bishop's Bible unless the truth of the original said otherwise. And I wanted to know what was going to be said about that, because many times in pro-King James literature and argumentation, it's often asserted and has been often asserted that rule number one wasn't really followed. And if you've been following this channel or following this class, from This Generation Forever class, you know that I don't agree with that. I think there's strong evidence from a document in the Bodleian Library called Bod 1602, which is the handwritten, which is a copy of the Bishop's Bible with the handwritten notes of the translators in the margin. So let me show you. I can pull up one picture of that. The Bodleian Library hasn't released a ton of information on this, so you are really limited in what you're able to see, especially on the internet. But here is a copy. So we have Bodleian Library, Bible in English, 1602. And this is, I believe, Second Chronicles, if my memory is not wrong. It could be. But here we see a 1602 Bishop's Bible with the handwritten notations of the translators, both in the margin and editing the text of a 1602 Bishop's Bible. If you take these annotations and compare them against a 1611 King James Bible, you can see very plainly that what's happening here in this document I have on the screen is the Bishop's Bible is being transformed into what would be the 1611 King James Bible. So it is very plain, it is very obvious, it is objective, it is documentable here that that rule number one was absolutely followed. In fact, there's evidence in British libraries particularly the Bodleian, of them following the Bishop's Bible, following Rule 1, and editing it. So when I was studying for this lesson, I wanted to know what some folks would say about Rule Number 1. Now, in this lesson here, Lesson 159, I quote two things from Peter Ruckman, where Peter Ruckman says that it's a Catholic campfire university folktale that Rule 1 was followed and that they followed the Bishop's Bible. Well, you can plainly see here that that's just not true. It's just not true that they didn't follow Rule 1. They obviously did follow Rule 1, and in fact, I assert in this lesson that I think Rule 1 is the rule they followed most often. So it's interesting that when you look at the extant evidence points to a very strict cohesion to Rule Number 1, yet many pro-King James advocates have said over the years that Rule 1, they just blew it off and didn't follow it at all. It's just not true. So while I was studying for this, one of the things, and wanting to know what was said about that, one of the things that came up in two of the videos that I watched is 1 John chapter 2, verse 23. So here I have it called up in the 1611. Now, I don't know why that little flash text came up there, but anyway, it went away, so we'll just move on. So anyway, this is 1 John chapter 2, verse 23 in the 1611 King James Bible. So if you look at the verse here, it says, whosoever denieth the Son, the same hath not the Father, but he that acknowledgeth the Son hath the Father also. So you can see very plainly here that this is set off in smaller font and type, and this is what italics look like in the 1611. Okay, so you could see the same thing in verse 25. You have even inserted here into the text and put in what we would consider in modern language italics. And so these whole 10 words here at the end of 1 John chapter 2, verse 23 are in italics. Okay, now in two of the videos that I watched, this particular phenomenon here that I just pointed out there in verse 23 was cited as evidence of some sort of extra supernatural activity that is happening here, that God is leading the translators to put those words in, those 10 words there that are in italics there in verse 23, that God is leading them to put those in. One of the videos even called it inspiration. And then they were real sort of unclear if it was first primary inspiration, say the way Paul was inspired, or whether it's secondary inspiration, as is talked about in Job, where it says that the inspiration of the Almighty, you know, giveth men understanding. And it wasn't clear, but exactly which type of inspiration this person was saying. But it was cited as an example that there was some sort of extra divine leading or unction or something upon the translators when they set out to do their work, okay, that these 10 verses were, these, sorry, the, not these 10 verses, that these 10 words were in italics there, okay? So, obviously you can see they're in italics. If I look in my 1769 Schofield Reference Bible, the 1769 text, they are also in italics there. So there's no doubt that the 10 words were in italics. So what I wanted to know, though, is, what's going on here? Okay, why would that be the case? So remember why I got to this point anyway. I got to this point anyway because I was trying to see about Rule Number 1 and to what extent Rule Number 1 was followed. That's what led me into these videos, two of which talked about 1 John chapter 2, verse 23 here, and the 10 words there in italics. So the first thing I did then is I said, well, is this in the Bishop's Bible? Are these 10 words in the Bishop's Bible? Because if Rule 1 is to follow the Bishop's Bible, and that's serving as the base text, if these 10 words were in the Bishop's Bible, then the King James translators aren't doing anything here except moving forward a reading that was in their base text. So I went to my downloaded copy of the 1568 Bishop's Bible to see what it would say. And I looked up 1 John chapter 2, verse 23, and notice right here. So this is from the 1568 Bishop's Bible. So 1568 Bishop's Bible, notice what it says. Whosoever denieth the Son, the same hath not the Father. But he that knoweth the Son hath the Father also. So let's go back now and look at it right here. Whosoever denieth the Son, the same hath not the Father. But he that acknowledgeth the Son hath the Father also. So we can see that the words are there. There's a little bit difference as far as the wording goes. Not a substantive difference, but a slight difference, different way of saying the same thing. But my point is, the King James translators are inheriting a project that has as a rule to follow rule number one, the Bishop's Bible, and we can see plainly here that the 10 words in question are clearly in a 1568 Bishop's Bible. So any argument that these 10 words in italics in a King James somehow prove something, some sort of supernatural unction upon them, that they're led to put these words in here before they were ever discovered in a Greek manuscript, the way that I heard it said, is just not true. The words are already there in the text that they are inheriting. Okay. Now, we could go a little bit further. And I also went to my copy of the 1582 Reims New Testament, and we can find 1 John chapter 2, verse 23, and we can look it up there and notice what it says. Everyone that denieth the Son, neither hath he the Father, but he that confesseth the Son hath the Father also. So here are the 10 words in question in a 1582 Reims New Testament. So when the translators are sitting to do their work, they obviously have it in the Bishop's Bible. The words are obviously in the Reims New Testament from 1582. They're in the 1568 Bishop's Bible. So this is a reading that is seemingly well known before 1611 when the King James translators are doing their work. We could even go and look at some more things. Here we can look at the Wycliffe Bible. So this is from like 1382. And we could see, so he that denieth the Son hath not the Father, but he that knoweth the Son hath also the Father. So as far back as you know, 1382, the words are also in the Wycliffe Bible. Now, why would that be? Well, Wycliffe is not translating from Greek. He's translating from Latin. And we could go look at the Latin Vulgate here and call it up. And we can see when it loads that the words are here as well in Latin, talking about confessing the Father, etc. So the idea then that the King James translators are under some sort of supernatural unction or divine leading or something like that, which is causing them to insert these 10 words, and that these 10 words prove that they were under extra inspiration or something like that, it's just not true. What it's demonstrating is that, more than anything, is that they are in fact following rule number one, because the 10 words, they're in the Wycliffe Bible from the 1380s. They're in the 1568 Bishop's Bible. They're in the 1582 Reims New Testament. And we can also look at the 1 John chapter 2, verse 23, and we can see and compare it against the 1550 Stephanus Greek text. And we can see that the 10 words are in the 1598 Beza Textus Receptus Greek text. So the idea that the words are the idea that the words are added prove that the added words prove extra inspiration, to me, just doesn't hold water. It's just not true. What it proves, if anything, is that the King James translators were doing exactly what they were instructed to do, and that would be to follow rule number one and to follow the Bishop's Bible, because there are the 10 words right there in the Bishop's Bible, in brackets, in italics and smaller font, indicating to the reader of the Bishop's Bible from 1568, 1572, 1602, that the words are inserted there. So look, folks, whatever we're going to say about the Bible, we have to base it on factual information. So I think that what this demonstrates more than anything else is the level of fidelity that the translators had in following rule number one. So this is just an interesting thing for you to think about, for you to consider, okay? And as we move on through my course here from This Generation Forever, there's going to be a lot more things that are going to be somewhat challenging, because what I'm seeking to do is base what I'm saying on objective facts, on objective, verifiable, factual, historical documentation, not simply on conjecture and things that have been said in the past where for which there clearly was no basis for. When Peter Ruckman said that they didn't follow Rule 1 and that it was a Catholic university campfire tale, he obviously didn't know what he was talking about, because here we see a bishop's Bible from 1602 with the handwritten annotations of the translators in the margin, literally conforming it to what would ultimately be in the 1611 King James Bible. So just some things for you guys to think about, and to give you a little bit of a heads up on where things are going in my From This Generation Forever class. We're going to be looking at three primary source work in progress documents: manuscript 98 at Lambeth Palace, Bod 1602 at Bodleian Library, and the notes of John Boyce also at the Bodleian Library. What we believe has to be based on objective facts and evidence. Now, before I go, I just want to remind you about our featured book sale for this month. Again, you can save 20% by using promo code BLESSED at checkout from Dispensational Publishing House on all six of my published books. So please make sure that you check that out. And that sale ends the end of the month. Also want to remind you here about our Rumble channel. Subscribe there if you're into alt tech sites. Want to remind you also about our podcast, my wife and I, the Just Graces podcast with Brian and Becky Ross. We are tardy. I'm sorry about that. Life is crazy. We are trying to establish some sort of a working model to get one of these done a week. So please bear with us, but don't forget about the podcast. There's a link to that in the description. And last, before I go, also Monday, Wednesday, Friday mornings at 9 a.m., I am rebroadcasting the Grace History Project here on our YouTube channel. Don't miss it. Make sure that you check this out. You won't be disappointed that you did, as we go through church history from the point of view of Pauline truth, as we trace the abandonment and resurgence of Pauline truth from Paul to the present. Don't miss the rebroadcasting of the Grace History Project. If you have missed some, avail yourself of the playlist here on this YouTube channel, and you have access to the video, the audio, the notes, the PowerPoint, everything that I've used to teach this is available to you here. Okay. And before I go, if you've never trusted Jesus Christ, if you've never acknowledged your sin before Almighty God and reached out in faith to a Redeemer who died on the cross for your sin, shed his blood, was buried, and rose again the third day as a total complete payment for sin, the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, if you've never trusted and relied exclusively on his death for your sin upon the cross, please do it today before it's everlasting too late. Thanks for watching this video, and we'll see you next time.